This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Barbara Quandt is the NFIB State Director in Indiana, and she is joining us to give us an update on how small businesses in the Hoosier State are doing and the latest surveys which have come out, as well as finding out, too, how the national NFIB reports are. In fact, another one just came out this morning, so we have an opportunity to talk with Barbara about that. Thanks for joining us on the program today, Barbara.
Hello, Chris. Good to talk with you again.
Well, it's nice to talk with you again, too. Let's talk first about how Hoosier small business owners are doing. The latest monthly jobs report is out, and if you will, fill us in on it.
Well, I'm a former small business owner myself, so I'm optimistic by nature, but I find this report troubling. Here are the top line numbers. As you know, we've been tracking small business economic trends for many decades. And the highlights here are that the optimism index has dropped a point, which is going in the wrong direction. The NFIB uncertainty index has increased 5 points. That, again, is going the wrong direction. Owners expecting better business conditions over the next 6 months has decreased 5 points. And 51%, and this came out in our jobs report, 51% of owners reported job openings that could not be filled. And this is a 48-year record high for the third consecutive month.
Are we finding that there is at least a common denominator, that is to say it's the type of business that may be facing the most difficulty in finding qualified workers, or is it almost every small business that is surveyed?
Just about everybody that we have spoken with is saying that they are having trouble finding qualified workers or finding workers at all.
Yeah.
And so this is, of course, some industries are experiencing greater pain in this regard. But it's like, for instance, the construction industry, 80% are having trouble finding workers right now.
Are we finding as well, too, that it's not just a construction industry? Maybe it's just general factory owners or operators in general that are looking for too specialized a job to be able to fill the vacancies?
No, we're finding that it's really generally across the board that very skilled labor is hard to find, as well as unskilled labor.
Mm-hmm.
And more and more small businesses are struggling, and 51%, as I said, of all owners reported job openings they could not fill, but 67% reported hiring or trying to hire in September, and that was increased as well. 80% of the construction firms reported few or no qualified applicants. That has slowed the construction of new homes, and home prices have soared to over 20%.
I was going to ask you next about that, because I know that seems to be the real sticking point, is that you find construction crews can't get enough carpenters or other skilled tradesmen,
mm-hmm.
and the unions are doing what they can to crank them out, but they're just not able to crank enough of them out, apparently.
That's right. They can't get them trained fast enough,
and
they are doing everything they can. Is this report the canary in the coal mine? I'm concerned. Small businesses have led the U.S. economy out of nearly every recession. This Small Business Economic Trends report has us going the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And with this optimism index down and the uncertainty index up, I'm concerned about the economic impact on Indiana. And Indiana has really positioned itself well to ride out future turbulence, but these are signs that are not good for the future. The number one problem is finding qualified workers for small businesses, and the second thing that's emerged is a supply chain problem.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask next about that, because I know that's a major problem for everybody. And there were recent reports coming out here that maybe we should expect fewer Christmas presents this holiday season because they can't get...
Number one,
they can't get the ships into the harbors, out of the open sea or parked outside, so to speak, to get them unloaded and to get all those containers on those ships that need to be unloaded to the places they're supposed to go. So all of these items that happen to be on these container ships are still stuck out there in the water, and they're trying to unload them as fast as they possibly can, but that's going to mean more problems for the overall supply chain, won't it?
Well, I thought I was coming across as negative
that report seemed to be that way. Yeah, it was all the reports saying here, well, that's not good. We were hoping that Santa Claus could do something good for us this year, but if Santa's workshop can't get the materials, then you know we're in trouble. To be sure. Let's broaden the scope here a bit here. We mentioned at the outset of our conversation, the NFIB national organization put out another Small Business Optimism Index today. And that's some of the latest information that NFIB's chief economist, Bill Dunkelberg, and his crews work on a regular basis. Will you fill us in on the latest report and how it all kind of fits together with us here in Indiana?
Well, you know, small business owners are the most optimistic people on the planet. And if we're going to get out of the recession and grow, this optimism index is key, and it's dropping. It's down to 99, which is a serious thing to look when you're talking about the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And while that's happening, this uncertainty index increased 5 points to 74. And so the pressure right now on small businesses is just tremendous. After going through the last year and a half with the pandemic, and just about everybody knows that small businesses were impacted the greatest segment of the economy, and now they're trying to grow and they can't, and that's really putting the squeeze on the economy with small businesses creating two-thirds or more of the net new jobs. So these numbers are troubling to me.
Mm-hmm. Besides worrying very much about the supply chain, because that has a great impact on how they are able to do business, I know that small business owners are very, very concerned about the positivity of profits, and they're not looking to, any higher profits anytime soon, I would imagine.
Yeah, right now, it really depends on what business you're in. We had a meeting last week, our first in-person meeting with small business owners in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And there were those that said that they were doing extremely well. Biggest year ever. Of course, last year was not necessarily the greatest year for most. But if you're a golf course owner or you have a wireless service, those businesses are doing very well. But if you're a restaurant owner or bars or anything in the entertainment industry, you are struggling.
I know in the past we have talked and mentioned about the efforts that small business owners in Indiana make in trying to get the finances they need to be able to bring the things in the door if they need it. But of course, everybody's been affected by the pandemic, and small businesses in particular. Are they still having a great deal of trouble trying to get their borrowing needs taken care of these days, it seems?
That's a bright spot. It's improved. So,
mm-hmm.
When we first started speaking, small business owners were just desperate for help. And the government did come through. Those PPP loans were a godsend for them. And so they have recovered, but they're also not borrowing as much these days. I think what you're going to see, and perhaps I'm wrong, but I think some are pulling in and being more conservative in their borrowing because they don't know what the future brings.
We talk about not only the issues of borrowing needs, and we've talked about, of course, the issues that everybody's facing with supply chain disruptions and trying to deal with that as well. How have the average selling prices been holding up from what you see here in Indiana through the NFIB? Are they able to do well, even though they may not get the supplies in? They're trying to keep the prices stable?
I think what a lot of small business owners have done is try to keep hold the line and absorb the increases in cost instead of raising their prices. But at some point, something's got to give, particularly when you're trying to hire people and you're having to pay twice as much for that labor as you, if you can find somebody, twice what you paid prior to the pandemic. And so I think that is going to, So far, we're not seeing it across the economy, but I think that it doesn't look like a good indicator when they're having to increase their costs of labor so much. Good for those who are looking for jobs, that's great, but you know that does at some point affect the cost of everything, including food. Are you going to pay $10 for a Big Mac because the McDonald's has to pay $17 an hour for an employee?
Well, that's an interesting point to think about, to be sure. I was going to ask you too, and you mentioned earlier about the fact that you had your first real in-person meeting with small businesses down there in Indianapolis. Did they, besides the usual problems, the usual concerns that they all have been having these days, did anybody have anything good to say about anything? Was it so negative that it was positive?
No. Actually, there were some that had said they were doing very well, and across the board, they were glad to be out and have a meeting in person because we've done so much virtually these days over the past year, and so I hate to be painting a picture of doom and gloom. I'm not. Yeah. What if anybody is positioned well to ride out a questionable economy? It's small businesses because they've adapted, they've survived through the pandemic, and they are the folks that bring us the new jobs. So hopefully, this is just a temporary situation, and we can get through these supply chain disruptions and have a Christmas.
Well, let's hope so too. If we can get more container ships in at Long Beach and in Los Angeles and some of the other ports around the country, they're not stuck out there in the harbor, and they can get their loads unloaded, and the trucks can get them to the final marketplace, and they'll do some good hopefully for all of us, to be sure. Barbara, thank you for spending time with us to talk about some of the issues small business owners have based on the latest surveys from the NFIB, and we'll hope to have you back on again soon.
All right. Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome. Nice talking with you. Barbara Quant is the NFIB State Director here in Indiana. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. Well, we've all had to, of course, deal with the pandemic, and we keep remembering that teachers and youth workers are very, very important in any time, but the pandemic and more so, in trying to create an affirming and supportive environment for our young people. And that's the topic of this month's discussion from Tammy Silverman, who's the president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute. And Tammy, thanks for joining us to talk about it today.
Always my pleasure. Glad to be here, Chris.
Well, you have some stats listed in the column, and maybe we should mention here first, because this is LGBTQ History Month, and there's a bit of history, I guess, in all of this, isn't there?
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the things that we're highlighting this month is the impact that educators have on ensuring that our students who identify as LGBTQ feel protected and empowered.
And we have, about 43,000 youth in the state that identify as LGBTQ+, I guess. I think maybe some people don't even realize there are that many.
Right. And those are ages 13 to 17. And those are the students who have reported identifying as LGBTQ+. So there's probably more. We're fairly certain there are more. But you're right. Even that number might be something that folks didn't realize.
I know that, and it's also a problem, too, that we can discuss as well, the fact that there are many youth out there who are hesitant to identify as LGBTQ plus because of the stigma that is still out there that may identify with them.
Absolutely, absolutely. And actually, sadly, 2 out of 3 Indiana LGBTQ students have heard family or friends make negative comments that are directed towards their identity, and so therefore that might, you know, obviously that affects how they feel and how their feeling of protectedness and comfort. Mm-hmm. And so it's really important. Again, one of the things we do know is that because students spend so much time at school surrounded by teachers, counselors, all the support staff, all of those folks, that often our LGBTQ students look to school for a source of understanding, caring, and support.
I know that IYI has recently put out a three-part series of data reports about LGBTQ plus youth in schools. And if you want to bring up some of the highlights that you note, we'd appreciate hearing about them.
Yes. Again, that series includes LGBT youth in schools. It also includes LGBT youth in foster care, as well as in the juvenile justice system, because unfortunately, in each of those settings, there's a lot more work that we need to be doing to make sure that we're including and supporting these students, because we know that kids that are in positive school climates, they're at lower risk of suicide. They also have fewer depressive symptoms. They also are more likely to stay in school, less days of skip school or skip classes, and there's lower dropout rates. So the benefits of providing that caring environment are very substantial.
I also know, too, that it's beyond what the IYI offers in information, but also that the Indiana State Teachers Association and their national group, the National Education Association, are helping to work with students and as well as parents and teachers that may have youngsters that identify as LGBTQ+, so that they are getting the support they need to keep on going.
Absolutely, absolutely. And both, as you just said, Chris, ISTA and the National Education Association have great tools and trainings on their websites that anyone can download, be it a teacher, educator, or a parent or family member or friend or coach or any of that. They have a lot of good resources out there, because you might feel like that's something you want to do. You want to make sure that you're providing a supportive, caring environment for a youth who identifies as LGBTQ, but you might not know. You might want some extra reinforcements or information or tools to do that.
I know that the part of the problem that that LGBTQ plus students face, besides the biases that are out there, but they're and harassment for that matter, but they're also facing bullying, and I know that is a big concern. And some reports come out and say that Indiana is not very high on the number of states that are dealing with the problem of bullying. What's the IYI trying to do to help encourage teachers and family members to fight this?
Well, fortunately, many schools are or already have intentionally built policies against harassment, bullying, you know, all of those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And again, we want to keep celebrating the ones that have done that work, support the ones that are in the process of doing it, and encourage those schools who may not have taken that step yet to do so. Because we know that, again, students, we want all students, but particularly the students that are facing the greatest bullying or harassment, to have a safe environment so that they can learn and grow and thrive. So we know in many cases school staff are already those critical allies, and the kids report that, which is a positive.
Are we going to be finding maybe more data that comes out in the next big data book that comes out here at the end of this year, early of 2022, to talk about the problems that LGBTQ plus students and family and teachers are facing these days?
Absolutely. This is a little bit of a foreshadowing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, thank you for bringing that up, Chris. You know, one of the bright spots is that we know that 97% of students who identify as LGBTQ+ report having that supportive school staff member. And more than half, 55%, say they have a network of six or more supportive educators. So that's a really strong positive component. Again, we just need to make sure that all the students have that same supportive network in their schools and ideally throughout their communities and all the activities that they're engaging in.
Tammy Silverman, thank you very much for helping us out with the information, and we hope that we can continue to let people know about the concerns that the Indiana Youth Institute has, especially when they deal with the issues that affect most Hoosier young people, and that includes the LGBTQ+ community out there.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Chris.
Tammy Silverman is the president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Karen Lauerman's executive director of the Lake County Economic Alliance, and she and her colleagues have been very, very busy these days. Even despite the pandemic, they've been able to help bring more economic development projects to light here in Northwest Indiana, and she is with us to talk about them. Karen, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's wonderful to speak to you and your audience.
Well, it's nice to have an opportunity to go down the list of things that have been going on here, certainly here in 2021. And let's start out with kind of the heading of developmental land space. We oftentimes drive around the communities we see, and especially in some of the major highways, we see a lot of open space, but a lot of these spaces are going to be turned into something, I understand.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think one of the important things that folks have to know that the Lake County Economic Alliance, or LCEA for short, is a private, nonprofit 501c3 entity, and our job is to drive jobs and investment to Lake County. And we have 19 communities and unincorporated areas. So when we talk about attraction of companies and bringing jobs and investment, what we have to look for is developable land space. And part of that is that we need to attract developers to acquire that land space and then take an opportunity to build spec buildings or buildings that don't have tenants or a build-to-suit that's specifically for a company.
Mm-hmm.
Right now in Lake County, we have a lot of that going on. Part of that is the .65 in Crown Point, that was just in front of the Plan Commission yesterday evening in Crown Point. It's going to be another Class A development on I-65, taking advantage of that area down near the Franciscan Hospital for advanced manufacturing, technology, those types of businesses, which are very complementary to that healthcare corridor that's developing at that intersection, as well as the growth in rooftops in Crown Point. Then we also have a spec building nearing completion that's about 280-some-thousand square feet under roof in Merrillville. And there are three planned buildings right now by another developer at Ameriplex at the Crossroads. The important thing to note about those two projects are that LCEA has been working for many years to attract national developers to Northwest Indiana, in particular Lake County. We've been very successful in bringing Crow Holdings Industrial and the Misner Group to our area. In fact, the Misner Group's first foray into Lake County is at 4400 Homerly on a 249,000 square foot spec building that they'll be groundbreaking tomorrow morning in East Chicago.
Wow.
So we really have a lot going on with developable land space. You can't ask companies to come here and not have a place for them to land.
Right. And something, I guess, like what's called a spec building is an opportunity for somebody who is interested in coming into Northwest Indiana, in this particular case, they're on Homerly in East Chicago, to look at something so they can kind of get an idea that this might be something that will be well-suited, even if it's a building that is, we'll say it's a big box, literally, made out of concrete.
Mm-hmm.
It's at least it's something that can be adaptable to whatever company is interested in doing there.
Exactly. And I think that we're seeing a lot coming onto the spec market because as we've advocated for many years, even before Don and I came to LCEA about 7 years ago, we were advocating that at the regional level, when we were with the Northwest Indiana Forum, that we don't have enough product. One of our colleagues likes to refer to it as having a used car lot, and you don't have any used cars to sell. And so now that we have spec buildings coming online, or we're repurposing buildings. So, for example, I know recently we talked about the Ultra in Highland, right there on Indianapolis Boulevard, very close to the expressway. Repurposing these big box stores or aged industrial facilities into state-of-the-art, technology-oriented life science or bioscience, those types of things that complement the community environment, you're actually opening up an opportunity for more people to see what can be at that location versus all they see is an empty, you know, former grocery.
Yeah.
So when you talk about these things, we'll be in front of the Highland Redevelopment Commission this evening to talk about how we're marketing to life science, engineering, technology, complementary companies to Highland, which is right now a landlocked community, when it comes to additional development in commerce and business park style development. It also, you know, repurposing these aged industrial facilities or these aged big box stores into something new, or taking them down and putting up something brand new. What you're doing is inviting an entirely different type of clientele to your location. So I think that that's part of this developable land space surge we're seeing, and the fact that national developers are coming into the area ready with their checkbooks to invest in Lake County and all of the region.
We're talking with Karen Lauerman, who is executive director at the Lake County Economic Alliance, and she and her colleagues are busy looking for opportunities to bring businesses into Northwest Indiana. We have some already that have been announced projects that have opened, or maybe they're just getting started. Will you go down the list and bring us up to date on some of the new projects that we've been talking about lately?
Sure, absolutely, Chris. I think one of the brands that people will most associate with is the Domino's food production facility. It's going to be a dough production facility in Merrillville. We broke ground on that with Governor Holcomb a few weeks back, and the town of Merrillville participated, NIPSCO, the entire team. It really took a village to bring this project to fruition, but it's going to be at the Ameriplex at the Crossroads, which is on I-65 just off of Broadway and 93rd. It's the Purdue Technology Center for others that recognize the Purdue name associated with that business park. They're going to have about 160 jobs. It's going to be one of the premier names in the park. Amazon is also in that park. They put up their building and are operational here, I believe, just in the last week or two. But as we know from other places around the country, Amazon comes in because they have a location in mind, and they arrive. But we also invited Quality Pasta and Turbonetics, Quality Pasta Food Production. Turbonetics, exactly what it sounds like, high-scale manufacturing equipment and Tier 1 vehicle supplier. And then we have Lamar, who's taking up office space. They're all at Ameriplex. We've just had a real big boon of development there in the central part of the county. U.S. Cold Storage is nearing final work on their investment in South Lake County at Route 2 and I-65. That's a cold storage facility. And the good news is that their investment there is going to be double what the original plan was, because of automation and a true technologically advanced, state-of-the-art cold storage facility. But the other things that we have going on that are in process would be the downtown Hammond revitalization plan. They're working on Rimbach Street. We've got, I know that people understand about the Bank Calumet building. There's also going to be another mixed-use housing and commercial facility down there. So we're seeing not only the business park development and independent property development for projects, but we're seeing the revitalization for areas for other opportunities. So we're very happy with that. In fact, we're opening a rail terminal. It's operational right now, but the official launch will happen in a couple of weeks in East Chicago. So that gives us even more opportunity to serve customers that might not have to be have rail on their property, but they can be rail served just down the way in East Chicago.
No, that's true. You mentioned about the opportunities that are starting to develop more often down in South Lake County, in particular there with the work that's going to happen for a cold storage facility there, State Road 2 and I-65. Are we finding that more businesses like that that need a lot of space are finding more opportunities in areas in South Lake County because you're not crammed in down there? You have plenty of room to be able to move into and to expand into?
In many cases, yes, and some of the more food-oriented companies, like the green space development, just for the simplicity of trying to be as green as possible, trying to be as, even though they appreciate remediated sites in the northern sector, green space is easier for food production development or cold storage. When you think about food and food production,
right.
It's very similar to pharmaceutical or life science. They need the space, they need the clean rooms, they need those things to protect the health and well-being of, the clients that they serve. And ultimately, we are all the consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you talk about that, green space in South Lake County, the nice part is that the Lake County land use strategy is in place. It's just been redone. I believe it was 2019 when they completed that land use strategy. And that corridor of I-65 is ripe for development. In fact, prior to even U.S. cold storage looking down there, Route 2, the reconstruction of Route 2 was created for truck traffic to stay very close to that I-65 corridor. And you see that as sort of our anchor on the south end, all the way up to the north of I-65, for where we get into more industrial and heavier use. But the idea is that entire I-65 corridor is developing at quite a quick pace, I would say.
Okay.
And that benefits not only the communities with I-65 running through their their communities, but for everyone, because we know that a win for one community in Lake County is really a win not only for the county, but for the region, because our average commute time is about, 30 minutes.
Yeah. We just got a minute left here, Karen. Let's talk a little bit about some of the, we know you're busy going to and speaking at conferences and the like, and you are also having an opportunity to work with site selectors. Will you tell us about some of the groups that have been in town to take a look at Northwest Indiana and Lake County in particular?
Absolutely. We had the pleasure of entertaining just last week three site selectors, all from different companies, but national brokerage houses, national accounting firms, people that deal in site selection, meaning they help the companies locate where they need to be, or they help them with incentives or tax, ramifications. But we were able to take them through Lake County all the way up north. We had lunch at Lost Marsh. They were able to meet Mayor Spivar and Mylon Krasinski from the Hammond Port Authority and the team from Hammond. And then we were able to take them on a mini driving tour through the north sector, down I-65, past some of our business parks, and then took them to our partners in at Fair Oaks Farm down in Jasper County. And they were also in Michigan City. So we were part of a regional tour, and these are folks that we hope will come back to us with projects because they had a chance to experience firsthand the hospitality of the region, but more importantly, they see how close we are to Chicago.
Karen Lauermans, Executive Director of the Lake County Economic Alliance, thank you for spending time with us to talk about the projects, what's ahead in the, not only the rest of this year, but maybe for the years ahead. We'll have you back to talk again soon. Thank you.
Terrific, Chris. Thank you, and thank your listeners, as always, for supporting economic development in Lake County.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we'll talk with Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer. He'll have some important money moves that we should know about to make before the end of the year. Another green transportation conversation on Green Fleet Radio. And Julie Wyszak with Purdue Northwest will join us about the campus information sessions that will be coming up at both the Hammond and the Westville campus. We hope you can join us for Regionally Speaking tomorrow.